Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues here on the American Family Radio Network. Thank you for listening to AFR and Today's Issues. That's the name of the show. I'm Tim with Ed Vitagliano. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Tim.
And Fred Jackson. Good morning, Fred.
Good morning. Got baptized all over again this weekend.
You did?
No. Well, we had 8 inches of rain.
Oh, I see. Okay, you're using a metaphor.
I'm using a metaphor.
Yes.
Yeah.
I know. How much rain?
8 inches of rain.
Seven or eight. That's what they were predicting, and I believed it because I had to drive about 200 miles.
You mean where we live here in Tupelo,
yes.
Mississippi?
Yes.
It didn't rain that much this weekend, did it?
Well, maybe where you were, but I had to drive about 200
miles.
Did
a hurricane land on top of your house, Fred?
No, I was driving from Jackson, our capital city. And it rained.
At this point, Ed, we're left with calling Fred a liar. So I think that that detracts from the camaraderie of the show. And I would suggest we just move on and let Fred go with his 8 inches unchallenged.
Yes.
Okay? So if he says it rains 8 inches in his world, it ain't.
We design our own reality.
Okay.
I've had sunshine for the last 2 weeks in my house.
I think we can all agree that it, quote, rained a lot, end quote, here in Northeast Mississippi where we live. And a lot of the South got rain. Mm-hmm. Which I'm about quite frankly sick of. I'm ready for a little drought. I told my friend the other day, I guess we'll play golf in June when it dries out.
Yeah.
All right, so much to discuss and talk about. Again, we thank you for listening. If you want to watch the show on Facebook or YouTube, just type in Today's Issues on Facebook or YouTube. And we also are posting the stories that we discussed there. Brent Creeley, our producer, is posting the stories. You can interact with other folks who enjoy this program, or at least listen. And so much there at Facebook and YouTube. Take advantage of that. Fred, good morning again, and what's happening in the world?
Well, it involves President Trump. Now, there's a shocker for you.
Mm-hmm.
Over the weekend, and we started to learn a little bit about this late last week, Andrew McCabe, the former deputy director of the FBI, he's facing possible indictments for things that he did while he was in that office. But he's now trying to peddle a book, and he gave an interview to Scott Pelley at 60 Minutes. And
two-part interview, right? One last week and one this week.
Yeah. Right,
he was teasing it last week,
okay.
I think.
Yeah, teasing it last week. But basically, and I think we're going to play a clip in just a second here, unless Brent has a McCabe clip that you've lined up there. You have that? Anyway, Andrew McCabe's being interviewed by Scott Pelley, 60 Minutes. And in this interview, McCabe confesses to a couple of things. He and Rod Rosenstein, who was the deputy attorney general, when shortly after Trump was elected, they talked about Rosenstein, according to McCabe, wearing a wire when he goes to talk to the president, basically trying to entrap him into something. And also, according to McCabe, they had serious discussions, he and Rosenstein, about looking at the 25th Amendment of the United States Constitution as a way to basically declare that the president was unfit for office. So have a listen a little bit here to what Andrew McCabe had to say last night in this 60 Minutes interview.
The deputy attorney general offered to wear a wire into the White House. He said, I never get searched when I go into the White House. I could easily wear a recording device. They wouldn't know it was there. A discussion of the 25th Amendment was simply Rod raised the issue and discussed it with me in the context of thinking about how many other cabinet officials might support such an effort.
Now, up to now, we've heard rumors of this, and Rod Rosenstein has said, I was just joking.
Right.
Andrew McCabe says, no, they were not joking. They were serious.
I believe that man that just spoke. That was McCabe. That wasn't a reporter.
No, that was McCabe.
And he's going, well, of course, the old saying, you need to hear the other side before you make an evaluation. I'm just saying that sounded credible to me in terms of in terms of whether this was a joke or not. No,
I don't think it was a joke either. And because this is days after the president fired James Comey, FBI director, and Rod Rosenstein is suggesting that he go in wearing a wire in order to get the president to admit that he was obstructing justice. That was the reason why he fired
They're
James
trying
Comey.
To basically entrap the president.
Right.
Now, the 25th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, and I didn't even know what it was. I'm embarrassed to say, before this all came up, I was scratching my head going, 25th, what does that say? Well, it has to do with the incapacitation, physical, I guess, or mental incapacitation of a president and what's to happen should that occur. Am I right?
Yes, it's for succession. If the president is not able to fulfill his duties, like you said, if he's assassinated.
Well, if he's in a coma for six weeks.
If he's in a coma, or if he is mentally unable. But in other words, if he has Alzheimer's or something.
Right.
This is not, we politically disagree with this guy. He's crazy, quote unquote.
But what happened here was the FBI and all these people, Rosenstein, and they're working for the FBI, right? He's the director. So they basically, if you believe what we just heard by McCabe, and he calls him Rod, mm-hmm. they're on a first name basis. They're professional teammates there, right? If I were President Trump, I would fire. Is his name
Rosenstein.
If I believe what McCabe just said, I would fire him today, because this guy is bad news.
Right.
And I know a lot of people who have been following this story in depth. They going, you think, Tim? Wow, you're a smart fellow. You finally caught on to this after a year or two. No, but I mean, that's evidence for the whole. This isn't inside baseball anymore.
Right.
Or an article in the Washington Post. This is the world to see on 60 Minutes. And this guy goes, McCabe says that the acting director right now of the FBI was willing to wear a wiretap to try to get President Trump.
He's actually, Rosenstein's the Deputy Attorney General.
Deputy Attorney General, excuse me. Was he ever acting FBI director?
No.
Okay, my apologies. Anyway, they work, the Justice Department oversees the FBI. Mm-hmm. So, what are your thoughts on this situation?
No, he should be fired. And the thing is, this is clearly political, that Rod Rosenstein was clearly trying to get rid of Trump.
Could you use the word coup here?
Well,
a non-military coup?
Is that
too strong?
I think you want to be careful. It's like calling everyone a Nazi.
Okay.
Sooner or later a real Nazi comes and you've used it. I'm not sure this is quite rises to the coup
would be a coup may be viewed more as something that's renegade. Whereas this was they were trying to go use the 25th Amendment to take out President Trump.
Yeah, he was interpreting the 25th Amendment as being a legal instrument that if you followed the law, you could remove him. A coup would be going outside
law. You could use the word coup in a metaphor. Senator Lindsey did yesterday.
Yes.
But it's not like a third world country. Anyway.
Well, the president this morning is using the word treason.
Right.
He is saying, if McCabe is to be believed, that Rosenstein seriously considered wearing a wire to wiretap the president of the United States when he went to visit him. And McCabe talked, and they sat down, McCabe and Rosenstein, and talked about what members of the cabinet might be willing to go along with us on the 25th Amendment. And apparently they named two. We don't know who those two are. But apparently,
and it was just their opinion that they would go along with it.
Keep in mind, folks, this is not a Tom Clancy novel.
Right.
We're not quoting something from John Grisham here. This really happened.
Yes.
And there was a concerted effort on the part of smart people at the Justice Department.
Top of the Justice
and the FBI.
Yes.
To bring down President Trump before he was elected and then after he was elected. Is that a fair?
Well, here's because I want to be very careful in how it, you know how I
if I overstated it. Tell
no,
me
no, no. I, no. Here's the thing. Rod Rosenstein going in to talk to the White House wearing a wire to discover whether or not the president obstructed justice is not illegal. That is not treasonous. Okay. The reason that doesn't happen very often is because people are supposed to be searched. But for Rod Rosenstein to do it for political reasons, okay, in order to get the guy out who is duly elected that he and his side, clearly he's a leftist, did not want in there, to me, that is treasonous. That is an abuse of power. Because you're not supposed to do that for political reasons. You're supposed to say, listen, did the president break the law? Was he dealing drugs out of his van before, you know, he was elected? Is this guy a criminal? We need to find that out. This had nothing to do with any particular breach of the law. Rod Rosenstein was trying to get the president to fumble his words so they could get him out of office for political reasons. That's what's treasonous.
And this is what we have to remember. What we heard from McCabe in this interview, 60 Minutes interview last night, it is not in a capsule all by itself. You've got to bring into what we've learned over the last year about the people working with McCabe. I'm talking about Peter Strzok and Lisa Page.
Right.
And what some people are upset about is Scott Pelley last night in that interview did not ask Andrew McCabe, what about your friends, your fellow FBI agents, Peter Strzok and Lisa Page? They met in your office. Remember?
Right.
Remember Strzok talking about we went to Andy's office to talk about the insurance policy.
Right. Insurance policy for what?
If
getting Trump out.
If Trump won the election, this is what we're going to do. And I believe, my opinion here,
and others.
Okay. Yes. The insurance policy was Robert Mueller.
Gotcha.
Who was appointed by Rod Rosenstein.
Yes.
To investigate a non-crime.
Yes. And who staffed his special counsel's office. With Democrats.
Democrat lawyers.
Democrat lawyers.
Some who would make financial contributions to the Hillary Clinton campaign.
Yes. This is crazy.
Yeah.
And corrupt, quite frankly.
Yeah. No, it's crazy how corrupt it is. Yes. You're just sitting there going,
Robert Mueller is James Comey's mentor.
That's right.
And he's a key witness. And it's clearly the statute meant here. It's unethical to say the least. You're supposed to recuse yourself. You can't investigate your buddy. Okay, right. That's the whole thing there. And if you look at this, folks, you talk about the old expression: the deck is stacked. The deck was stacked against President Trump and his administrations before they were even elected by these people that are being. And some of them are writing books now.
Yeah.
You think they'd lay low and hope this goes away, but they're proud. They're proud of it. Now they're ratting on each other.
And the Clinton campaign and the Democrats, who actually did collude with the Russians to get this dirt on President Trump, they turn around and they orchestrate an investigation on Trump, accusing him of colluding with the Russians.
And that dossier that was used.
Yes.
Was just like something.
Was opposition research.
But it was also ridiculously phony, not even credible to anybody who read it. Greg Jarrett, who I heard speak the other night from Fox News legal analyst, said anytime you want to laugh, just read the dossier that was used to get the FISA, wasn't it?
Yes.
And they didn't tell the FISA court that this dossier was had paid been produced for. By the Democrats.
Right, right.
It was leaked to the media, and then they went to the FISA judge and said, look, the media is investigating these accusations, so we need the warrant.
For those who don't know what a FISA court is, what is it, Fred?
Foreign Surveillance Act.
It was meant to catch terrorists, right?
Yeah, yes. It was brought in after 9/11.
It's meant to sort of be an emergency court that can give you a warrant so you can listen in on or wiretap or follow somebody you think is involved in terrorist activity.
Yes, so if they're calling an American and you say, I think this guy's conspiring with these terrorists, and so you can't just wiretap an American citizen, you go to the judge, you say, here's the evidence we have. We think this guy's in league with terrorists. We want to tap his phone, or which we used to call a wiretap. You get the warrant from the judge who says, okay, you're going to catch this guy talking to terrorists.
Right.
You can't just catch this guy, you know, ordering a pizza.
Right.
So that's what these warrants are supposed to be.
That's the only thing that stands between us and a police state. You have to get a warrant from a judge.
Yes.
You have to have probable cause. And what happened was they went to this court, that is the Justice Department, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Under the Clinton administration.
Homeland, I think maybe, I don't know if it's under Homeland Security, which is, I guess, is still under.
They went to this FISA court, and so they could spy, on somebody who was working for the Trump campaign.
The Trump campaign.
Yes.
He's talking to Russians.
Right.
That's what they were saying. That's what they argued.
I tell you, a lot of things in this world in politics is just, you know, yeah. He said this and he said that, and they did this and they did that, and tit for tat, and you know, we all get used to it, and sometimes get tired of it, and most of it's just meaningless and oftentimes just harmless. But in this case, and trying to be as objective as I possibly can, obviously, I favor President Trump's policies for the most part. You know, rarely disagree with him on things. So I come from that political perspective, but just looking at this whole episode that we've just described, and McCabe went on 60 Minutes last night to talk about, objectively, the and by the way, Greg Jarrett's book is out now called, this is what I heard him speaking on the other night, The Russian Hoax, or Russian Hoax, I think it is. Mm-hmm. If the book's anything like his talk about this, it's very methodical, meticulous, footnoted, and he lays out the whole thing, and this whole thing just stinks to high heaven.
This is on a different level.
Oh yeah,
than things that we've seen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh yeah. This is trying to change the election.
This is trying to overthrow the results of a legitimate election in this country by using the power of the federal government under the control of the opposition party.
Right. And don't forget, just to one side note to this, don't forget that Bill Clinton, while his wife was under investigation, I put that in quotes, by the FBI, which she never was put under oath, by the way.
Right.
By Peter Strzok. Never was put under oath.
And he wrote the letter, the document exonerating her before he even interviewed her.
Yeah. Yeah, the fix was in. This whole thing, it's really dispiriting, quite frankly, in your confidence in our government and the truth. Is it Superman? Truth, justice, and the American way? Who is that? Captain America?
No, that's Superman.
Okay, Superman, anyway. that's dead. When you look at what happened in this episode, really, quite frankly, you talk about a special prosecutor. It should be for this whole thing, this whole episode. But what I'm going to say, remember that Bill Clinton met with Attorney General
Loretta Lynch
on the tarmac in an airplane for a half an hour meeting, private meeting. Mm-hmm. And even after that, she didn't recuse herself.
That's right.
Only revealed because some local
television station
stumbled on it.
Right. Had somebody on the right met with a key witness, for a private meeting, the media would have absolutely crucified that person, and their career would have been over, and it'd have been like, you expect us to believe there wasn't? Anyway, so, but she didn't even, Loretta Lynch didn't even recuse herself. I mean, I don't think she did. No, she didn't. So, the left, I use that, the left in all this thing thought it was their mission their righteous mission to stop President Trump, stop candidate Trump from being president, mm-hmm. and then after he became president, to either remove him or so or the insurance policy too, to harass him and his friends with this Mueller investigation, which, by the way, according to Greg Jarrett and maybe Abraham Hamilton, there's talk about this before, the statute that is used for the special counsel, Robert Mueller, to investigate the president and his administration, is supposed to cite a crime to investigate. In other words, here's a crime that was committed, special counsel, you go investigate who all was involved in it. In this case, there was no crime cited. There was just speculation that somehow President Trump was involved in illicit activity with Russia. But it was just speculation, right?
Right. If the in the city of Chicago or Detroit, a bank is robbed, prosecutor's office, the police investigate that crime. The prosecutor tries to get evidence to find out who committed the crime, and then you prosecute that person. And so for a special counsel to be appointed under federal law, the same thing must happen. You must say, here's the crime, and we are appointing an independent counsel to investigate it, and then the process unfolds. But there was never a crime cited in the appointment of Robert Mueller.
But who appointed Mueller?
Well, it was Rod Rosenstein.
The same guy.
Right.
The same guy, to come full circle now with what Fred started with this, that McCabe said was ready to personally go into the White House and try to get the secret recording of the President of the United States, right?
Yep. Right.
Yep.
So, this whole thing, I mean, again, I said a lot of the political talk is riffraff, and you get tired of hearing it's just Democrat, Republican, liberal, conservative, you know, it's just meaningless. This whole thing, this whole episode now is becoming more and more clear, if it wasn't already, this was a grand scheme. This was a grand scheme to take down Donald Trump.
Yeah, and this, you know, and the question may be, okay, where do we go from here?
Right.
Now that we have all this information. Well, Lindsey Graham, the Republican senator from South Carolina, who is now the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, and this is going to be cut number 8, Brent, he was asked about this on the weekend, and he said, as chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, he wants to bring Rosenstein in, he wants to bring Andrew McCabe in, and others connected with all of this. He wants answers under oath. Cut 8.
We're a democracy. People enforce the law, can't take it in their own hands. And was this an attempted bureaucratic coup? I don't know. I don't know who's telling the truth. I know Rosenstein's vehemently denied it, but we're going to get to the bottom of it.
Will you subpoena McCabe and Rosenstein to appear?
How can I not, if that's what it takes? We're going to find out what happened here, and the only way I know to find out is to call the people in under oath and find out, you know, through questioning, who's telling the truth, because the underlying accusation is beyond stunning.
Beyond stunning.
Mm-hmm. I think it has to go past that. I think William Barr, the Attorney General, needs to begin criminal investigations, and I think people need to go to prison if they've broken the law.
Yes.
And you wonder why President Trump was so angry with Jeff Sessions.
Right.
he, quite frankly, with all due respect to Attorney General Sessions and his distinguished career as a fine man, he completely blew it when he recused himself from this oversight. And now it's subjected President Trump to all this stuff and his family and the country. And so while Jeff Sessions was trying to do the honorable thing in his eyes,
right,
it completely backfired. So we'll be back in a moment with more of today's issues on the American Family Radio Network.
On the next Today's Issues.
Walker Wildman is handling our Facebook presence in the world.
Yeah, if you have a Facebook account, just type in Today's Issues in your search bar, and then our page will pop up. And you can watch the show there every day, or you can view all the articles that we talk about.
Right, but you can also be our friend.
Don't miss the next Today's Issues. Weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio.
and on Facebook.
Hello, I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. You know, on our spiritual heritage tour of Washington, D.C., we go to the Supreme Court. That's one of the places we go on day one, and we visit the inside chambers. We go to where the justices sit, and it's an amazing place to visit, the Supreme Court of the United States. We don't just look at the outside. We go to the inside and see where the justices sit and where oral arguments are heard. So that's just one of the places we visit on one of the days when Washington, D.C., and we also go to Mount Vernon, the home of George and Martha Washington. So we're going in September. June's full. September will be filling up soon. If you want more information on this Spiritual Heritage Tour, go to spiritualheritagetours.com. That's spiritualheritagetours.com.
Fox News Commentary with Todd Starnes.
Hello, Americans. There's a war against the colonials, and the bad guys are not the British. That story next. Liberty University is preparing students to enter a competitive job market. They have a low student-to-professor ratio, a caring Christian faculty, and more than 550 programs of study, ranging from undergraduate certificates to doctoral degrees. As the largest Christian university in the world, Liberty continues to establish itself as both a leading liberal arts university and an institution dedicated to the Christian faith. Learn more at liberty.edu. That's liberty.edu. For as far back as anyone can remember, the Colonial has been the school mascot at George Washington University. But there's an effort underway to change that. Left-wing students and at least one faculty member are leading the charge to banish the Colonial mascot. Critics say the Colonial is offensive, especially to international students. History professor Denver Brunsman wrote a scathing op-ed in the student newspaper. He said the name harkens back to slavery and the conquest of the American Indians. One student leader says the mascot encourages oppression and hatred. In reality, the mascot honors the colonists who gave birth to this great nation. The Colonials managed to stave off the Redcoats, but only time will tell if they can beat back political correctness. I'm Todd Starnes.
That's your Fox News commentary.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim with Ed and Fred, and we thank you for listening. If you'd like to send us an email, you can do so at comments@afr.net. Well, folks, we've spent 25 minutes or so talking about what was been happening with this whole sinister plan to get Donald Trump, both as a candidate and as a president. And personally, again, I've tried to be objective on this kind of stuff, and I think this is just absolutely undeniable what took place here. I haven't read Greg Jarrett's book. I heard him talk the other night, but I would encourage you to get it and read it for yourself. I'm going to do that. It's called Russian Hoax. But hopefully there will be some justice in the end in all this.
There better be.
There better be, or the deep state controls our country.
Right.
And by deep state, I mean the Washington political class,
the bureaucracy,
the machine, if you will, who are mostly leftist and liberal, and in their, you know, and so that's why you can get away with, at least heretofore, what all we've talked about the last half hour. We'll see if there are any, and you know, when you see what happened with Roger Stone, the friend of the president the other day, we can talk about that later. But these SWAT team comes in, raids his house. Well, it's a military operation, it looked like.
It was.
It was like 29 agents.
29 agents. M4, a lot of the military gear.
Night vision. And they had armored vehicles.
You come to arrest this man at his residence.
His wife, his hearing impaired wife.
At his house, and they storm in like they're getting El Chapo.
Right.
Huh?
In fact, they had more people to arrest Stone than they used, I think, to arrest El Chapo and to get Bin Laden.
Yeah.
And then they made them stand outside in their pajamas, barefoot, handcuffed, standing on the sidewalk.
With to charge, CNN, them, with, to charge CNN, them with what?
With a CNN
or
crew.
Arrest them for what?
Well, I guess the process is underway now.
Yeah.
I don't know what anyway, the charge
Anyway, I'm talking, this is, they're going after President Trump's friends and associates.
To squeeze these folks like they did with Paul Manafort.
We're almost 2 years into this.
Try to squeeze them to
say something. Give up something on Trump. Trump, you're getting close to firing them all, maybe with this William Barr. Maybe he'll come in and clean house, get some order restored to this kind of stuff. Well, some good news last week I read about from a press release from the Liberty Council. Matt Staver is the founder and lead attorney for Liberty Council. They are a constitutional law firm defending the First Amendment religious freedoms of Christians around the country. And Matt's going to tell us about this good news. Good morning, Matt.
Good morning. It's good to be with you.
Thank you, brother. I was down in your neck of the woods there in Orlando. That's where you live, right?
That's where we live, in the Orlando area, and that's where our main Liberty Council office is. We have offices elsewhere as well, including Washington, D.C., but it was good to see you this past weekend.
Matt, when do you complain about the weather?
Well, we don't like hurricanes.
Right. Okay. That's a strike against Florida, right there. I got you. But
an occasional tornado hits Florida.
Yeah.
You got the whole alligator thing.
As long as you don't get too close to them, they're nice to look at from a distance. But
good night. I was in Orlando over the week, since Thursday. I had a conference down there. Matt was at it, and I was going 78 degrees. I could get used to this. Right. No wonder people retire down here.
Yeah.
We try to tease our friends during the depths of the winter months.
Oh, gosh, man. All right, Matt, tell us the good news. Tell us about the case, and then tell us what the verdict was that we're all so happy about.
Well, this is the case that came out of California. It's outrageous, just like some of the other things you were talking about. This is the very leftist state legislature passed a bill that said crisis pregnancy centers, in order to continue operation, you had to promote abortion. You had to put a notice on your door, in your lobby, and your printed material online. 29 words, it had to be 48-point font. Now, that's huge. A 48-point font for 29 words takes about 3 pages on an 8.5 by 11 just for that one. And if you're in certain parts of the state of California, you had to do it in up to 13 languages. So you imagine making a brochure. All you have is the Crisis Pregnancy Center name on the front with an address. You'd have to have page after page after page of this notice in 48-point font, multiple languages, that directed people come into your Crisis Pregnancy Center where they could get free or low-cost abortions, and you had to give their phone number out. And that case went up to the United States Supreme Court. There were several cases. One of them was ours. We represented some crisis pregnancy centers. And last June, the U.S. Supreme Court issued an amazing decision, including Justice Kennedy, ultimately finding that this violated the First Amendment, and then they sent it back down to California. And now what we have in California across the board is that law has been struck down, has been permanently banned from going into enforcement. And now the federal judge has ordered, in our case, the California Attorney General and the state of California to pay $399,000 in attorney's fees and costs. Now, we don't represent our clients for cost. We provide our services pro bono. But if we win a case like this, we keep track of our time and all of the expenses in this case, and many others are very expensive, and we submit that, and that's what we did. And now they have to pay $399,000. It could not come from a better situation where they were trying to force the crisis pregnancy centers to literally promote death over life. I mean, this is as ridiculous as if you have an NAACP office operating and they had to promote the KKK. I mean, it's that bad, except here what we're talking about is life is what the mission is of these centers, and they had to promote a place where you can kill the very baby and harm the very women that they were trying to serve and protect. So the good news is it's unconstitutional, and now California has to pay, and that federal court order has just been entered.
Matt, it's Fred Jackson here. I guess after a while, I think there is some discouragement in the pro-life movement because so many court cases go against life and for the right of the woman to do whatever she wants with that little baby. First of all, were you surprised by this? And do you think there is some movement inside the legal system that is starting to recognize that this really is human life and that the pro-life side has a legitimate cause to fight?
Well, you know, on the actual merits of these cases, it's always pretty easy to know where the law should be, where the law currently is. And obviously, this is a no-brainer. We should have won it at the lower court, should have won it at the Court of Appeals, but we didn't. And so the same arguments that we argued there finally took root, although by a narrow margin, 5-4, believe it or not. And that's too close for comfort at the U.S. Supreme Court. We knew that they would be successful. The other thing is, by the way, this same case also has given new wind to our sails to challenge these change counsel cases, because the California state was arguing that this just should be considered professional speech, less protection, just like in the change counsel case that came out of California. And you know what? Not only did we win the Crisis Pregnancy Center case, and they have to pay, but in that same decision by the Supreme Court, they ultimately named the case, the Pickup case out of California and the King case out of New Jersey. Both of them are cases which we argued you can't restrict counsel to someone seeking to change unwanted same-sex attractions, behavior, or identity. And the lower courts went the other way, but the Supreme Court actually mentioned those cases and overruled them. So good news on two fronts. I think on the other issue, though, there's more and more recognition that's taking place regarding the humanity and the protection of children at the moment of conception in the womb, both on the state legislature level, but also even in the courts. Alabama recently issued a decision saying that life begins at the moment of conception, urging the Supreme Court to overrule Roe versus Wade, arguing how it's so out of touch with law and science. Another case is pending before the United States Supreme Court, also out of Alabama, a case banning dismemberment abortion, where you rip and tear like a chicken leg off of a baked chicken, and you do this to babies. They ultimately struck the law down, but they also said, you people at the Supreme Court, you've destroyed this area of law. You caused a constitutional aberration, and you need to change it. And they actually have urged them to reverse Roe versus Wade. That case is currently pending at the high court, and they described the brutal dismemberment procedure. If the court takes that case, and we hope they do, we actually filed a brief urging the court to do so. That could be the end of Roe versus Wade. It's that case. There's also other cases. The drumbeat, the scenario, the sequence of cases going to the Supreme Court are continuing to increase, and I believe it's just a matter of time before this abortion decision is overruled.
Matt, thank you. Tell our folks how they can follow your work and read more about it.
They can go to Liberty Counsel's website, lc.org, just two letters, lc.org. That's lc.org.
Hey, thanks, Matt. Keep it up, brother.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
That's Matt Staver joining us from the Liberty Council. Isn't that some good news right there?
Good news.
I read that last week, and my heart just leapt. I think, thank God for this favorable ruling. And number one, that these crisis pregnancy centers in California weren't forced to promote abortion. Can you imagine? This is how evil and wicked these people are.
I know it.
Who, you know, they want to force your pro-life crisis pregnancy centers who are out there being supported by people with $20 a month gifts and churches and volunteers. And the only reason they do this every day is because they care about those young ladies who are pregnant and are thinking about an abortion. And they care about the young ladies. Most of them are Christian-based. So they care about the soul of the young woman involved. And then they care about saving the life of the unborn baby from being dismembered or having a saline solution injected into their little body in the womb and burned to death. This is how they kill these babies, folks. I hate to be so descriptive, but sometimes we need to be reminded about how barbaric abortion is. is it DNC?
DNC.
DNC, that's where...
Dilation and...
You got little children in the audience. You got children in the audience listening to me right now. I'm going to give you a few seconds to turn the radio down. But, I mean, we need to be reminded, folks. They chopped the baby up in the womb, and then they reassembled the parts outside the womb to make sure they got everything. Or they use a saline solution, which scalds the baby to death. It's salt, basically. Those are the two main ways, I think. But anyway.
It's horrifying.
It's horrifying. And the state of New York is cheering for doing that through till the baby's ready to come out the birth canal.
Right.
So anyway, it's just sick, and it's evil and wicked. Abortion is. Anyway,
and the Virginia governor, Ralph Northam,
yeah.
Saying, yeah, we're okay with if a abortion fails and the baby is born alive, but we're just going to put it on the counter over
right.
here.
Right.
And let it die. We'll keep it comfortable.
And the way he described it was just so. Anyway, so that's what this is all about. I do think to a certain extent the walls are closing in on the abortion cause in pro-life favor, because it with modern day science and the 3D ultrasounds and you know what's happening in these women are going into these crisis pregnancy centers we talked about, and they're seeing their baby there on the monitor, and their hearts are beating, and in some cases they're seeing the body outlined, and they're changing their minds. They're saying, I put it up for adoption.
These babies are sucking their thumb. They're
right,
yawning.
Right, right. So anyway, the
tissue.
California state legislature wanted to force those crisis pregnancy centers to promote abortion. That's what they wanted to do to them.
These are nonprofits. We had a meeting this morning. If this had failed, this shows you that elections
if what
do
had
have
failed.
If the Supreme Court had ruled against the nonprofit, the crisis pregnancy
right.
centers,
and said no, you have to promote
you
abortion.
Have to, you're talking about nonprofit organizations being forced to speak things they disagree with.
Mm-hmm.
That's when we say elections have consequences,
right, right.
and what's on the Supreme Court, who's on the
right.
Supreme Court matters.
Right.
We were that close to a flip decision.
Well, as Matt pointed out, it was a 5-4 decision.
5-4
right.
decision.
Right. That's how close these secular, quote, progressives are. They want to shut down Christianity.
4 Supreme Court justices thought it was okay
yeah.
for California
yes,
to tell nonprofit organizations,
yes,
yeah, you have to do the exact opposite of what you were created to do.
Yeah, let me tell you something, folks. Had Hillary Clinton won the presidency, that's exactly what would have happened.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
So if you know people who are in the Never Trump crowd, I understand you wrestle with that because President Trump did not have a history of being a conservative nor, very
Christian character.
Or living a moral life.
Right.
Okay, I understand that. But when you looked at that and you said, okay, it's the future of our country, of the Supreme Court, what do we do here? Then had she won, then you would have had the criminalization of Christianity, basically.
That's right.
would have been underway. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Well, related to what we're talking about is a column that was written by our own Will Addison recently. And Will is the director of Urban Family Communications. And he's on our team here at AFA and AFR. And Will and his wife, Miki, many of you are familiar with them through the Urban Family Radio. Will, good morning to you, brother.
Good morning.
So, you wrote, and we posted this on our website, our Facebook page. We posted this story that Will wrote. Will, by the way, you've been in charge of our urban family communications effort for what, 4 or 5 years now?
Yeah, right about 5 years.
5 years. You and your wife, Miki,
yes,
have a heart for reaching the African American community.
Yes.
You'll reach anybody for the
Amen.
Lord. Amen. You'll reach anybody for the Lord. You don't discriminate.
That's
but
right.
I mean, we've made you and Miki mm-hmm. and we here have made an intentional effort to do more work to try to reach out to the African-American community, African-American community in terms of what's our mission?
Well, we try to bring truth, wisdom, and empowerment to the community. We want to do that through biblical programming, you know, discipleship. We see radio as discipleship, you know, so we have different programs that we air throughout the day, and it's all geared towards helping people to grow in Christ, but also to be a more aware politically, too, because there's a lot of lies that's been told, you know, to the community.
Now, we have a few radio stations that broadcast Urban Family Communications, but yeah. A lot of people find out about you guys and listen to you and get your information on your website.
Yes, urbanfamilytalk.com is the website. And we also have mobile apps for your Android and your Apple device. Just search for Urban Family Talk. And we have a channel on the TuneIn app if you search for Urban Family Talk. So a lot of listeners listen that way.
All right, tell us about this column you wrote.
Well, basically, you know, just on the heels of what happened in New York.
You mean what we were talking about a while ago
with the abortion.
Celebrating abortion?
Exactly. You know, I just looking around and just kind of examining the landscape, you don't see a lot of black voices speaking out, you know, condemning this stuff that's going on with abortion. And but we are quick to rise up and speak out against maybe if it's a white cop that beat up a black man, or if there's some type of redlining or gentrification, things like that. You know, there's these issues that we are quote unquote woke about. And so the column is, if you really want to be woke, and I feel like if you really want to be woke, you will be talking about abortion, because this is killing black babies, white babies, but black babies in particular at an alarming rate. And it
now
seems
why,
to be silence
on
that.
Why is that? Do you think that the abortion industry targets mm-hmm. young black women who?
Definitely.
Okay.
Definitely, because the facilities are placed within the communities. If you look back to Margaret Sanger, I'm sure y'all talked about it many times. That was part of the purpose for establishing a Planned Parenthood to, you know, get rid of weeds that were not wanted, you know, and she was speaking of black people.
And that's what she said. That was the terminology.
That's the way she said it?
Yes.
Yeah.
She wouldn't be elected today. If I can't believe she'd be so brazen as to say that.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy when you think about it. So with that on record,
right.
It would seem as though that would be one of the biggest things we would fight against.
Okay.
But it's not.
So you're giving a self-criticism of your African-American brothers and sisters here by saying we need to speak out more on the abortion issue because it's affected. We need to be, quote, woke on this, which is a word that's used often in.
Yeah.
Because this issue of destroying unborn human life is affecting our community, that is the black community in America.
That's right.
Disproportionately.
Right.
To other. Okay, I got you.
Right, right. And if we're going to be concerned about something, that should be at the top of the list.
You're not saying ignore all these other issues that that folks need to speak about or feel like they need to talk about.
Right, right.
Having to do with the black community in America, but you're saying this should be right at the top. Yeah, but but let me ask you this, Will.
Mm-hmm.
If you do that,
yeah,
then you're going to have to take a look at voting Democrat.
That's why they don't do it.
Because, okay.
Yeah.
So I'm catching on to something here.
All that is intertwined.
You know, because you have a lot of the Democrat black politicians. They support Planned Parenthood and what's going on. And I would have to look at them and say, well, you are killing off people that you're interested in voting for you, you know, a whole base. So it doesn't make sense what you're doing. If you really care about black people, number one should be you should be against Planned Parenthood. And it is not that way.
Well, and that it seems to me that Christians should always lift up biblical values above political affiliation.
100%.
And that should be true about Republicans as well as Democrats. There are certain issues that you cannot compromise
certain
on. Certain issues.
Not every issue. Fill a pothole.
Right. That's absolutely right. You should not compromise, you know, my view, life, human sexuality,
top, right?
Marriage, those kinds
at the top.
Life would be at the top, and you can't compromise that for your political affiliation.
That's a deal breaker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with saying, listen, I want the potholes filled a certain way, so I normally vote Democrat, but I'm calling out the Democratic Party for your stance on abortion.
Yeah.
I mean, Christians have to be willing to do that.
Yeah. Right. If you say that you're a Christian first, and you're a Democrat, you have to look at the platform and what being stood for and say, hey, I don't agree with that because the Bible says.
And if you are a Democrat, at least speak out against your party on this issue.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. I'm not saying everybody has to convert to being Republican. Republicans maybe have their own issues from time to time, but at least the Republican Party, their platform is pro-life and is public about it. So the Democrats are pro-abortion. They call it pro-choice.
Yeah.
But anyway, Will, thank you for writing this, brother. And I know your heart's desire is to reach out and bring in as many, educate.
Yeah.
And your African-American brothers and sisters to the truth about the gospel.
Right.
And what's going on in our country and things like human life.
Yeah, if we believe the Bible, we have to believe what it says about life.
Amen.
And so if we are Christians first, and so that's how we should govern ourselves.
Yeah. Hey, thank you, Will. Appreciate it, brother.
No problem.
Will Addison joining us, Addison, and we have posted Will's column about what he just discussed at our Facebook page for today's issues. So check that out, and you can follow Will and Mickey and the rest of our team there at Urban Family Communications in the ways that Will just described it. You're listening to Today's Issues. I'm Tim with Ed and Fred. Fred, next story.
Yeah, Friday, the nation was treated to what I would call vintage President Trump. He had a news conference in the Rose Garden. And he had no notes. This was straight off his heart, his head. And basically, he was signing on the continuing resolution to fund the government through September. However, everybody knows he did not get much money to build the wall. And so in doing so, he declared a national emergency, which presidents have been doing since, 73, when the law was brought in that allows the president to do that. For instance, Barack Obama, when he was president, did it for swine flu. Pardon me. And I think some of these resolutions are still in place, these emergency resolutions. Anyway, President Trump being President Trump, he says, and I'll let you listen to it, I know what's going to happen. Somebody's going to go to court right away. In fact, the ACLU within 2 hours said they're going to go to court to say that the president can't do it on this issue of taking money from other departments to build the 200 miles of wall that he wants. This is what it sounded like in the Rose Garden, cut number four.
I'll sign the final papers as soon as I get into the Oval Office, and we will then be sued, and they will sue us in the Ninth Circuit, even though it shouldn't be there, and we will possibly get a bad ruling, and then we'll get another bad ruling, and then we'll end up in the Supreme Court, and hopefully we'll get a fair shake, and we'll win in the Supreme Court.
Sounds like he knows how the story goes, right?
Yeah,
and he's exactly right. That's what's going
to
happen.
Yeah. He's getting used to it.
Yeah, you're going to have one federal judge, the one who hates Trump. Well, there's a lot of them, probably, but in Hawaii or Oregon or Washington State, you know, and they view themselves as the Supreme Court of America,
right?
Because they're going to make an injunction or whatever that's going to be national.
Right.
How this happens is beyond me, and they get away with it. But they are federal judges, and they like little gods.
Right.
So out there.
Little G.
Yeah, with the little G. All right, well, I think it'll go down just like, and I think he will win at the Supreme Court level. I'm talking about the president, will win on emergency funding for the wall when he gets to the Supreme Court. I think he wins 5-4. But we shall see what happens with all this. Fred, thank you.
You're welcome.
Steve Jordahl will be along with much more news to talk about in 5 minutes, so don't go anywhere.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.